This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. HuntStand is the most popular and functional mobile hunting app on the market. With a variety of base maps to choose from, satellite imagery that is updated every month, the ability to check the weather, know property information, and even catalog your trail cam pics, HuntStand even gives you the ability to import pins and location markers from other mobile apps. Visit HuntStand.com or download wherever you download your apps. Enter discount code SN20 at checkout for 20% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today is no stranger to Western hunting. His name is Jonathan McCormick, and we've talked on multiple podcasts together, and I'm really excited to have him on to hear how his season is going and what he has coming up. It's always a good time to chat with him, and this is a guy I see myself hunting with multiple times in the future. I mean, he is just a good dude, loves to get it done, loves the grind and the hard work and just pushing through and making a hunt happen no matter what the conditions are. And so we're going to hear how his season's going and what he's got coming up. So let's jump into this podcast with Jonathan.
Like, he was doing things that were just badass.
That was one of the coolest moments of my life.
I was really scared, but knowing that Dan had the gun, I did have the rifle, like, we would be okay.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And on the show with me today, I've got a repeat guest, kind of. You know, now you've been on both podcasts. I've been on your podcast, and I just feel like we're going to spend a lot of time talking and hopefully hunting together soon. But Jonathan McCormick's on with me. He's with Redbeard Outdoors and Redbeard Fit Crew, and he's just a super bad dude, I guess. I don't know. He's got a bad beard. You know, like when you have a red beard, I feel like it's like a next step. Everybody could have a beard like yours. And if it's like black or brown or blonde, it's all right. But when it's red, it just seems better.
That's funny. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. Yeah. I guess I am a repeat just on a different podcast since you're too cool and you've got two podcasts. So
dude, now we've got three podcasts, man. I mean, it's not an outdoor one, but my wife and I started one and it's not nearly as great. I mean, I say that, but she's already got more listens than I did on the first 16 episodes of mine and we're three episodes in. So
there we go. Now I'm going to have to get my wife a microphone and we'll have to get on yours.
Dude, yeah, that'd be awesome, man. We can just do like a couple.
If I could get her on my podcast, some people have said that. And I'm like, man, I'm working on it. We'll see.
Yeah. See, the problem is as soon as you get your wife on the podcast, she's probably going to start listening to the podcast. And
oh, she does. She gives me plenty of feedback.
Oh, shoot. All right. See, my wife doesn't have time for it. She's like, I don't have time to listen to your podcast. But she's been on mine a couple times and it's a good time, but that'd be sweet.
Yeah. When my wife is really bored at work, she's an accountant. So when she's sitting there making spreadsheets dance, like she does, sometimes I'll get a random text like, hey, you could do this or, you know, I'm like, okay.
Thanks for that. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Hey, you're listening. Thank you.
What's going to be really great is like, hey, you don't need to change anything. Like, this was amazing. Great job on the podcast. And you're going to be like, are you being sarcastic right now? Because I feel like it's always constructive criticism.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be complete sarcasm coming from my wife.
Yeah. Dude. So what's been up since the last time we talked? Because I mean, we talked last time kind of near the beginning of seasons. Right. Mm-hmm. And, I feel like everything was just a kicking off or about to kick off in most states. What have you been out hunting?
Yeah. So I had a mule deer tag here in Utah and I have an elk tag. It's supposed to go through Thursday, but Thursday's my daughter's birthday. So I'm cutting it short to tomorrow. And, you know, man, it's been a rough season. We were talking about yours, just before we hopped on here. And, I'm like, man, I might have to pay you to ship some meat out to me. It's been my season been rough, man. I don't know. Where do you want me to start?
Start at the beginning, man. Were these both tags that you drew or over the counter?
So elk is over the counter here in Utah for residents. I've got the over the counter tag. I didn't get the limited entry. That would be the draw tag. I don't know how long that's going to take me to get, but I'm putting in for it. And I didn't do any out of state hunts because I'm still just, you know, figuring things out as far as the Western hunting goes. Next year, I will be at least going to Colorado for an elk hunt. And then Utah as well, but I did draw the mule deer tag. So the buck tag this year. And so I guess it started back at the end of August, which I don't know why Utah does that, but they do, where you start, I think it's like August 20th or 21st is when you officially start archery season.
Okay.
I wish they would take that week and cut it out of August and slap it on the end of September. It would be nice. Cause we end, officially, I think it's September 22nd or 21st, kind of when things are getting really good.
It seems weird that they would have it open that early, especially if you're going to take time away from like the beginning of the rut or like peak activity in some spots. Mm-hmm.
Well, it used to be that so my first year hunting archery was it ended on the 15th. So right as things were getting like even barely started. So they added another week, which was nice. But I do wish they'd get rid of the August because it's just so hot, you know?
Yeah.
Basically, the whole strategy behind that is to sit water and hopefully you pick the right water hole. So that started in August. I was mainly chasing mule deer in August, just the velvety mule deer. I got pretty close on a couple of them, but it's just so, again, it's so crunchy and dry here in Utah. You kind of have to play things right. And I had a couple good stalks. I guess my best one, I got into 34 yards to where I could see his head. I saw his ears, but his vitals were covered by the sagebrush that we have out here or whatever you want to call it, the sage, the mahogany, what I don't know, but the little small bushes that I couldn't shoot through. And then he caught me. I was thinking there was a bush behind me, but it was a little bit, I guess, to my right from where he was looking. So he could see me plain as day. We had a stare down for like 5 minutes and they just turned around and took his buddy with him and walked off. So that ended August. Then September, I spent, I'd have to count the days, but it was the majority of those 20 days in September I was out there. I want to say it was, I don't know, 18, 19 of those days I was out there. And it was interesting, to say the least. They started bugling kind of the last week of the season. The area that I was hunting, there's not a lot of glassing that you can do. It's really thick. And then there's also a lot of people. So
is
it was
it
almost
like a lot
like,
of undergrowth, or is it mature tree thick?
Kind of a mix. Okay. To be honest with you, some of the areas had a lot of undergrowth, but as far as being able to glass, it was the taller trees that were getting in the way there.
Yeah.
And then there was a lot of people. So it was almost like whitetail hunting in this one area. You kind of had to make sure you knew where they were walking, and kind of sit in a good spot, which I'm not good at doing. That's why I really love elk hunting, because I want to be able to see them, go after them, chase them. So I was always like one step behind them, and they would be really quiet during the day. So I know I'm not anywhere near good at being calling elk, but they weren't answering to anything. So near the end of the season, they were bugling all night to the point where they'd wake me up in the middle of the night. But as soon as the sun came up, they would stop. So I'd go out there, and it was interesting because it was one day that I was out there. I was walking this track, and I've got it marked on Onyx. I went through this whole draw, put on some miles. My buddies came in the next day. I took them to a different area because I'd seen a bunch of people in this one area that I was during that day. So I wanted to take them somewhere else to hit another one of my spots that I was thinking, you know, I had e-scouted. I thought there'd be elk in there. We came back the very next day to that same draw that I had marked my track on X. And I sent my buddy up the right side of the draw, his brother up the left side, and I went up the middle. There was sign everywhere. And the guy that went up the left was saying that there was something big moving in front of him, but he couldn't even see it. It was so thick. It was being super quiet. It'd break a branch every once in a while. We didn't end up getting eyes on that. And then we get a text from his brother that went up the right side that was like, hey, there's a bull down over here. This guy's cleaning him up from the night before. And he sent me the pin on Onyx where that bull was killed. And it was smack dab where I had walked 24 hours previous to that guy killing it. Dang. So, right. And so like they're in there, and I was in the right spots, but I was always either like one step behind them, one step in front of them, whatever. The guy said, he was like, man, I didn't even know the elk was here. I just sat down, I was eating my snacks, and I heard a twig break.
Oh my God.
It was a squirrel. And I look up, and 50 yards away, there's this elk. And he wasn't anything massive, right? But he was a bull, branch-antlered bull. He was like, yeah, you just walked up to me basically 30 yards, put it right through the pump house.
Oh my goodness, man.
Yeah. So that's kind of how that was going. I had a couple times where like I was going through some deadfall. I had a bull chuckle at me, and we kind of went back and forth for a little bit, and then he just left. And what blows me away about elk is that even when it's so crunchy and dry, they're able to somehow take those massive antlers like what you've got behind your head and walk through these trees and not break a single thing or make a single noise. And they're like 3 to 4 times heavier than I am.
Yeah.
And they're just cruising along like nothing. But I step over one deadfall and the whole freaking forest lights on fire and knows that I'm there. You know,
it sounds like a fireworks show.
Dude, exactly.
That's the weirdest thing, because like we've seen it multiple times where like a squirrel makes so much noise and you're like, dude, what is that? Like, that's got to be a freaking bull coming through here. And you see like a chipmunk, and then you have elk all over around you and you don't hear a single thing. Like, we walked into some one day, we never heard like tree branches. I mean, we were in thick cedars. We were actually making a play on a herd of like 70 elk, and the only reason we knew they all took off, one, we smelled them. My buddy stopped me. He's like, you smell that? It was my first year.
It was like a barnyard.
He goes, you smell that? And I go, yeah. And he goes, that's elk. You will never forget that smell now. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's potent. And he's like, dude, they've got, like, they must have just been in here. We walk another 5 yards, and the ground just starts shaking. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And we could hear, like, just their footsteps on dry ground. but they ran through cedars. We didn't hear like commotion, like branches breaking, didn't see like needles all over the ground. They somehow got out of there without making much of a noise aside from, you know, the stampede sound that 70 elk make when they run.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, it blows me away every time, and that's what keeps me coming back. So that was my September. And then what happens in Utah is you can hunt the extended archery. So you take like a 20-question quiz. It's basically like talks about no trespassing, et cetera, that you have to know the different area, because the extended unit shrinks the area down pretty harshly. So it kind of condenses a lot of the archers. But it runs through the end of November for mule deer, and it runs through December 15th for elk. And so, and you can switch that between whether it be a bull or a cow, right? So either one of those two. And so, and the same thing for deer. So if you've got the tag for mule deer, if you've got a buck, you can also go for a doe, whichever one you're wanting. And so this whole time I've spent, I don't know how many days now going after between mule deer and elk, and my wife's going to be real happy tomorrow when I'm done.
Yeah. So see, it's so funny how like the household changes, because during season we're all like jacked and wives are like, oh my gosh, does the season ever end? And then as soon as season ends, we go into like, we call it deer depression around here when whitetail season's over, but like out there, you know, season ends and the honey-do like list, this, man. Yeah, it's like, oh my gosh, you got to be kidding me. And they're just thrilled as can be to have their husband back and not be single anymore.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, I mean, I've already got, you know, a nice long honey-do list. My buddy's actually got a bison tag for the Henry Mountains in January. So that's going to be a freezing cold hunt that I'll probably spend a couple of weekends down there helping him. So anyway, going back to this season. So with the mule deer, it's a lot of fun chasing them during the rut because they get really dumb. At least the bucks do. The does not so much, but they're always annoyed, you know, because the bucks are chasing after them. And so I went out quite a few mornings and I had just told myself I'm not going to shoot anything less than a 2-point because I got my spike last year with the muzzleloader. And so this year, you know, I found some good 2-points, some really exciting ones that had some deep forks. It was just a lot of fun watching them as the rut started kicking off, chasing their does, you know, fighting each other, hearing the clacking of the antlers, etc. I had some really good stalks, but then this one morning in, oh man, it was like November 11th or 12th. We were going to be heading out the next day to my brother's wedding in North Carolina. And so I just went up for the morning and I don't think anyone from my work listens to this. So I went out before we had a work meeting. So I had this little short window, right? So I went up, found the deer and I took a shot. I was pretty far. It was an 83-yard shot on a mule deer and it was basically straight downhill. So it was like shooting 83 yards out of a tree stand, like downhill. And there was a lot of things that went into that. A hiker came up just after I shot. He, for some reason, wanted to take some pictures, and he talked to me about it. We watched as all the mule deer. So I could have sworn I hit him and took the shot. Shot broke clean. I feel like it hit a little back. He was a little quartered towards me, so I felt like maybe it was liver and guts. So not the best shot, but I was 100% positive I'd hit him. And so I was talking with the hiker at the same time, keeping an eye on all the deer that I'd watched, and I'd counted the bucks that were in the draw. And so I saw them, you know, go out, and I didn't see, or I counted the same amount of bucks that I'd seen before I took the shot, and they all left and none of them had holes in them. None of them were bleeding or limping. And I was kind of like, okay, well maybe did I hit a branch in front of them and see like the poof of the snow come off the branch? And, 'cause I swear I saw it come off of him, like the condensation or whatever, poof. And he kicked like he got hit. Well, I got down there and there was no blood. Couldn't find my arrow and there was no blood. And I was like, man, well, that's weird. 'Cause we had just had some snow. So if there was even a speck of blood, I would have seen it.
Yep.
And so I followed his tracks, 'cause he was the only deer that had gone this certain path. So I followed his tracks, still no blood, no arrow. And then it mixed in with the other deer. And I was like, well, I counted all the bucks going out. So maybe it was a clean miss, which is better than nothing.
Yep.
But I kept running it through my head and just thinking like, man, I swear I hit him. Like I could have sworn I saw the fletchings go through his body. And anyway, so I go to North Carolina and in all of this, I actually lost my release.
Oh no.
So, I mean, if anyone knows anything about these Ultra Review buttons, they're not cheap.
Yeah.
And so that got lost while I was tracking the deer in some super thick stuff. It's black, so it's not standing out. I don't have a colored lanyard on it, you know? And so that was going through my mind. I went to this work meeting, came back, a family hike, and then I, you know, went up with one of my sons and tried to find it, couldn't find it. Went to North Carolina, came back, and as we were landing on Monday, a buddy of mine that was hunting in that same area texted me, you know, just kind of catching up about his hunting that weekend, and said he had busted some deer. He's like, but it was weird. I came across this, this buck that looks like he got shot a little far back. And I was like,
oh man,
I was like, drop me a pin. So he dropped me the pin and he sent me the picture, and the picture was of the, where would have been the exit of the arrow.
Yep.
And it lined up with my shot like 100%. And the rack wasn't anything impressive, like that stuck with you. It was just a little 2-point. So I was like, that could be mine. I'm going to go check it. Cause my plan was to go back out and start hunting bucks again. Cause I thought I had a clean miss.
Yeah.
And so I go up, and so I found where the pin was and where I had stopped tracking, where his tracks had met with all the other deer, was 3 steps away from this little ravine, and he was right there.
Oh my gosh.
And he had died like instantly. And it was exactly what had happened was he didn't bleed out the entry hole because I was so high up. It went through actually the last rib, but up near the spine, nicked the lung, went through the liver and went out his hind quarter on the other side. So what happened was he didn't bleed out the entry hole and the exit hole was plugged by guts.
Yep.
So zero blood.
Oh my gosh.
But he had just bedded right there and died, and all the other deer had left. So
just right where you, that's heartbreaking. I mean,
yeah,
it happens to everybody. If you hunt long enough, you're going to have something like that happen. And it's unfortunate, but like we had the same thing. I hunted with my uncle. Well, I would hunt the same property as my uncle. I would always go and help him drag deer out. You know, like it's a highlight of the day when you're not seeing anything and you hear a gunshot and you go and look. Well, he had the same type of thing happen and he had shot one and he's like, hey, it went up and over the knob, but just go look for blood. And I look and look and look, and I'm following deer tracks and stuff. And I'm like, dude, there's no blood anywhere. And right after you get up and over the hill, maybe 20 yards farther is the property line. So I'm like, there's no blood anywhere up to the top of the hill. And I didn't go up and over to look. 2 days later, we were hunting back there. And I was like, hey, I just want to see this little bowl near the property line. And I walk up there and his doe was dead right there that he had shot. And we're like, oh my gosh, it was me as like a 13-year-old kid, you know, like I don't know anything, but there was fur, but it was all white. Mm-hmm. There was no brown fur or anything. So right. I thought what had happened is he like had just grazed, or, you know, the vortex from the from the round, like kicked a like 10 strands of hair off. Yeah, that's all I thought. And then sure enough, we get over there. The coyotes had tore it up completely. And but he had made a great shot on it. It was a perfect shot, and I just didn't, as a new hunter, put in the due diligence that, you know, I should have to make sure. And so, but it happens, and it's unfortunate. Yep. But like the fact that you actually did end up finding it, or your buddy found it and dropped you a pin, like it gives you closure on it at the very least. You know, it
so didn't and
just get injured and get eaten by coyotes.
Exactly, and he actually, it was weird. Nothing had picked at it. I mean, maybe birds had picked at like the exit hole. And so I was thinking maybe I could, cause it had maybe gotten up to 40 degrees at the highest during those days we were gone. If he hadn't bedded in the sun, I probably could have recovered at least the back straps.
Yeah.
But I cut him open and man, he smelled so bad. But
yeah,
so I tagged him and took the head out. And but that buddy of mine didn't know that I was hunting up there, hadn't known that I'd taken a shot, nothing. So that's something kind of I wanted to comment on, just for, you know, people out there. Like, the thought crossed my mind to just leave the deer and not go check it. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I was like, I still want to hunt. I'm not going to be able to recover that meat. That was one of the first things that crossed my mind. And I was like, no, that for me, that tag, that was probably going to take me another 2 years to draw again. It's not worth me, like who I am. Right. Yeah, and so it sucks that I didn't bring any meat home, but I learned a lesson. Right. And I also learned that I need to trust myself a little bit more. And the fact that I knew I'd had a good shot, because I mean, he really did. He piled up right there, you know. And so I just need to be a little bit more diligent, I guess, in my tracking, and maybe not try and squeeze it in before a work meeting. So,
dude, my thing is, like, I watch people on TV and they've got a camera crew with them, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so they'll shoot and then they'll review the footage over mm-hmm. and over and zoom in as close as they can and see where it goes. And for me, I'm like, that has got to be one of the best tools that you can have as a hunter, because you don't have to rely only on your memory and what you think mm-hmm. you saw. You can actually look back at physical evidence of what happened. Because, dude, my buck this year, same exact thing. I shot my buck with a 300 PRC at 70 yards. Mm. Smoked it. Absolutely knew I smoked it. It ran up the hill. I got a second shot on it and shot it again, and it dropped. From my first shot to my second shot, it had probably gone 80 yards and there wasn't a single drop of blood anywhere with a 300 PRC, you know. But with the bullet expansion these days, like, I've had multiple elk that I find, elk, deer, you name it, that I find the bullet actually, like, lodged in the opposing side of it. With a bow, it's totally different.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I do like about archery, is that it typically, you know, if you make a shot on it, it's going to pump blood. But obviously, you know, it's not every time. You have to treat every hunt, every shot, like it's brand new. And, but yeah, to trust your instincts and trust that, like, hey man, I swear I saw it go in. It's got to be around here somewhere.
Yeah. And I mean, at 80 yards, like, that arrow, especially when you're shooting at an animal, it's like slow motion. Like, I can still picture it right now, just that the flight of it and then seeing it just bury into the fur,
yep.
You know? And, so anyway, that, you know, I went up, recovered the buck, couldn't get any meat off of that. And then a couple days later, I actually went up with my son and we found that, that's why I'm holding it. Right. But we found the release. So nice. It had been sitting up there for about a week and a half. And I'm gonna have to add that to my review whenever I do a review on this thing, about how there's literally no rust. It went through a couple snowstorms, melted snow, it was in the mud, it's not gritty, anything. So anyway, it's a great release.
Heck yeah. Everybody go out and buy one of these releases.
Yeah, exactly. Crispy will be happy about that one. But no, it's it was rough. It was rough because that was my first mule deer buck with a bow. I got a doe last year. That was my first big game kill with a bow. And that one went way different. Like, she literally rolled back to my truck. So
that would be really nice to have.
Yeah. That one was 70 yards uphill, went through both shoulders, pinned her to the mountain. And then when she rolled back, it snapped the arrow and she rolled like right to my truck. I literally maybe took 10 steps, drug her and threw her in the back of the truck.
I love when they die close like that. And mm-hmm. we rarely have that happen, you know, where I shot mine, for it to make it back to even a side-by-side trail, it'd be like 4 miles direct line straight to it. What's funny is the final day of elk hunting this year, I helped this one guy, Chuck, get a bull. It was his first bull, his first elk hunt ever. Super awesome hunt. There was two bulls with it, and I was like, dude, we got to get the other guys up here. And they were just down the ridge, probably, I don't know, 400 yards. And right after he shot, one of the guys rolls up on the four-wheeler, and I said, go back and get Thad, or like, go back and get the other guys, like, we've got another bull. And there was several people with bull tags, but Thad was next on the list. So he ends up making a shot on this bull, and we could see it limping after he shot, and the way it acted, I was like, that, like, we think you made a good shot. It was hard to see. I mean, it was a long shot. It was 600 and some yards, and with a rifle, obviously. And he, so we watched this bull. We end up going over and trying to get on it. One of the four wheelers couldn't make it up the hill. They come back. I hop on mine with another, with Thad, and I'm like, dude, let's go after it. So we just like barrel up this hill, and I think we're both going to die, right? Like, we finally make it over there, and they had just crossed the four wheeler trail. And at this point, we only knew of one bull. We saw it pick up a couple other bulls in like two drainages. And then by the time we get over there, there were five bulls. And I'm like, holy cow. Like, there's a lot of elk right here that we didn't know were around. And long story short, he had made a very bad shot on this elk. My buddy Sean said, like, Sean and I are very similar in the fact that, like, if it's hit, we are going to follow it until it goes on to private or until the blood trail runs out, whatever. He followed this elk on foot, just like one drop of blood every 15 feet. And he followed it for 4.5 miles, ends up catching up to this bull and putting a shot on it. And where he finally shot it was 200 yards from spike camp. Wow. And, or not spike camp, our main base camp. And so we actually drove the four-wheeler right up to it, loaded the entire elk on the back of the four-wheeler, which we had never done before. The suspension was bottomed out on my buddy's four-wheeler.
I bet.
It was pretty funny. But that's awesome. Like, the fact that it went that far, I know why now. It turns out, I don't know how this is possible, but it went through the front left hoof and the back right hoof.
Huh.
And I'm like, okay, but like the front left hoof was completely blown off. The back right hoof had just one hole through it. But the snow, as it was packing, the snow would like gather on it. And then every like, you know, 5 to 10 yards, it would fall off and there'd be a drop of blood in some in some snow. And so he ended up recovering it. But dude, I'm like, that would have been the easiest pack out ever. You know, had that been the first shot. But it ended up being the hardest track job that we had ever done, and luckily still recovered it.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's rough, but you know, the due diligence, and it's something that isn't spoken about a lot, and I think, you know, it's good to bring that up, because you know, just not, I guess, not leaving it and saying, oh, well, you know, I had a bad shot, I'm going to move on to the next one. Like, that's kind of your responsibility as a hunter, to go out and make sure you've done your due diligence and tracking it. And again, that was kind of eye-opening for me, to not have any blood and me having felt like I had done my due diligence and it still wasn't quite enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, that'll carry on into future hunts for sure. This elk season's kicking my butt. I you know, late season, we're getting a ton of snow right now, which is great. We've been getting snow since the end of October, which helps bring the elk down.
Yep.
And, I've had some good opportunities. And then, you know, a week and a half ago, I walked in after a fresh snowstorm. And for some reason, so I had seen this spike tuck in behind this ridge, and I was like, great, I'm just going to get to the top of that ridge and glass down into that little ravine or the draw over on that other side. There's got to be elk in there. He's got to not be the only elk that's in that draw.
Yeah.
So I put my head down. I mean, the snow was probably 1.5 feet deep. And I just was trudging through. I mean, just hitting it as hard as I could. I hadn't brought my snowshoes, so I was just post-holing, getting as far as I could. And I hit these elk tracks. And for some reason, my brain was just so focused on getting to the top of this ridge that I didn't think, and that was just at the base of the ridge that I was going to start heading up. So my mind was saying, you know, you're about to have to get the heart pumping a little bit more and get moving, right? Yeah. But I noticed these elk tracks. They were big, so they were bull tracks. And I was like, great, it's heading in the same direction that I am. For some reason, didn't click in my brain. The snow just stopped. These are fresh. like 30 yeah. minutes or less.
Dang.
And it didn't click. So anyway, I'm walking and I'm following these tracks, and then I hit kind of a spot where I was like, I literally cannot go up the face of this because it's so nasty thick. I would need a chainsaw to get through. So now I'm like thinking, okay, you know, which way do I go? And as I'm sitting there thinking that, I hadn't checked my wind or anything like that. I hear some rustling off to the left. I'm like, maybe it's the snow falling off the tree. I look over, there's 3 5x5s.
Oh.
60 yards from me.
Oh my gosh.
Walking perfectly broadside, and I had no shot. I mean, the trees were like this. So even with a rifle, it would have been a sketchy shot.
Yeah.
And I just looked at them and just kind of admired them as they majestically, very quietly walked through these trees. And I was just like, man. And so I had hit that part where I needed to turn left or right, and I was going to turn left. So I turned left, and not even 40 yards from that left turn were their beds. And it smelled like a barnyard. Oh, it, fresh goodness. Pee, crap, the three beds, big old massive beds just right there. And all I could think was, you're such an idiot. Like, you should have known that you saw these fresh tracks. Like, I just seen so many tracks from previous snowstorms that just didn't click in my head that these were fresh because the snow had just stopped.
Yeah.
And so anyway, and then of course the wind was blowing right their direction. So they didn't hear me and they didn't see me, but they definitely smelled me as I was walking that way. And yep. So I followed them around, and I get up to the, like, fighting through this thick, nasty stuff. I bust out some good does and a really nice 4-point buck, which of course, after I shot my buck, I found all these really nice bucks that, you every know, time. If I'd waited a week, it would have been great.
Yeah. You know, if you don't have a tag, they're going to be right in front of you. Oh, yeah. If you do, they're nowhere to be found.
I swear there's pheromones. That's why they want to keep you with the physical tags and not doing digital tags, because they put pheromones on it. Like, yeah. I'll swear that up and down.
See, I think the other key is, like, they can just sense when you can hunt them, because I have had so many animals within range when I can't shoot them. And so I'm convinced what I need to do is have my buddy buy a tag for, like, go and get the tag for me, and I will be completely oblivious. And then last minute, he's going to be like, hey, you actually have a tag for that. And then I can be like, oh, sweet, and shoot it.
Yeah, that might be it. All the stress hormones you're putting out as you're, you know, exactly. like stressing about, okay, I could see that.
Yep.
So yeah, today alone, I saw 40 plus turkeys, and jeez. I've got turkey tags, but they're for private only. And so they were literally sitting off the highway, 15 yards off the highway. Like, I could have pulled off and shot them with my bow. They weren't moving. I pulled off and took some pictures of them. They were just like hunkered down. They're like, what are you going to do?
Yep. Jeez. Dude, Utah has got to be just a killer place to hunt turkeys, because I had never been to Utah up until this last year, up until summer. And no, sorry. Early in the year, I went out there for a mountain lion hunt. And we were looking for tracks, and this whole dirt road was just covered. It looked like a mosaic pattern of turkey tracks. And I'm like, this would be the coolest country to turkey hunt in. Obviously, if you're doing a turkey call, you know, you got to keep your head on the swivel for mountain lions. Yeah, I say that. But as soon as I have a tag, I'm not going to see any.
They're the smartest dumb birds around.
Oh, dude, I hate them so much, man. It's like the only thing that I love to shoot out of hate for them. But we were on the way to our elk unit, and we drove through this town, and I swear for 15 miles, I saw probably 400 turkey. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me, man. Like, where these things no just problem. Hang out. Like, do they not have anything that kills them around here? Because I feel like you could just shoot in any direction and probably kill a turkey in some of these spots. It's
oh,
insane.
Yeah. I could have filled all three tags today with one arrow. They were just like stacked on each other. I could have just plucked
them. You have a little turkey kebab already ready to go. You just throw your whole arrow on the fire.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I love Utah. It's got a lot of great opportunities, to be honest with you. And the fact that, you know, our season, it goes so long, you know. So anyway, with those three bulls, you know, I followed their tracks, got through some really thick stuff. And I was like covered in these like prickly, whatever they are. and I was getting really excited because I was finding, you know, elk fur on the branches and all this stuff. And I follow their tracks down to the bottom and I run into another hunter. I was like, did you see those three bulls that just walked past you? He's like, no. I was like, well, I was literally just following their tracks across this face right here. They had to have walked right past you. He was like, no, I didn't see anything. And then I look up and a ridge over, they were already at the top of that other ridge.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, how?
Yeah.
And so I had maybe 45 minutes left of the day, and it was so thick that one, they were already on high alert, but two, there was no way I'd get to them. And even if I did, there's no shot.
Yep.
So I just got some good footage of them, and they were pretty bulls. Two of them were good five bys, and then the other one was, he was okay. But yeah, they were some good looking bulls. And I was like, man, I texted my buddy who was on the ridge just behind them. I was like, hey, I'm sending three bulls your way. I know you don't have a tag anymore, but you know, just in case you want to get a good picture of them. But yeah, so that's kind of how things are going right now. I haven't been able to find them since. I'm turning up tons of mule deer, tons of turkeys, obviously. But yeah, I've got tomorrow, I'll be heading up and hopefully able to knock one down. But if not, I'll be doing another tag soup recap on my own podcast.
Oh man, dude, those elk, I get so frustrated with them and watch how easily they maneuver the country that we hunt in. And I'm like, okay, I get it. They've got four legs, but they're 3 to 4 times heavier than we are. And I'm like, also, even with two legs, we've got half the legs. We should be able to move half as fast as them. No, it's like 1/20th the speed that they can move. And I've watched them clear 2 miles in a matter of like under 10 minutes, just watching them book it. We've had some private land guys and guides that they'll see hunters, you know, making a play on elk, and they will actually come in and push the elk back onto private. And that happened to us 1 year, and we probably saw 70 elk, and they were all probably 200 to 300 yards on the public land. We could have hunted them, and we were making a play, and these guys just start bombing down the mountain towards them. And I watch all these elk, and it for real, I wish I had video of it, because I would guess it was 5 to 6 minutes that they made it all the way across this entire valley, meadow, private property, and into a completely different mountain range. And jeez. I'm like, you got to be kidding me, man. Like, they can just
they're move. Tough.
And it doesn't matter what's in their animals. Way. Like, they'll push through anything. Me, I have like some scrub oak, and I'm like getting tore up and getting bound up, and my backpack's getting caught. I'm like, dude, these things have 3-foot wide antlers, and they're just walking through it like it's no problem at all.
Mm-hmm.
They drive me crazy, man.
It is a little crazy in it. But, you know, it keeps me coming back.
Oh, yeah.
Keeps me coming back. So,
you've got 1 day left to hunt, because then you've got your daughter's birthday, and then what's after that? I mean, once elk season ends, what do you do?
Well, so one highlight of this season is I've been able to help pack out a lot of animals.
Nice.
I've helped a ton of people up in the area that I was hunting for the mule deer. You know, one thing that I've kind of pushed is helping other people as they're out there, because I feel like a lot of people are closed off. And I don't know if it's intentional or not, but, you know, especially once I knew my tag was filled, you know, I was like, look, this is where I've seen some good mule deer. If you want to go after them, that's kind of the spot there. There's four guys that I was like, hey, text me when you get one. Right. And three of them ended up getting one.
Nice.
And, you know, I was like, all right, one of the times we were sitting there, eating dinner or just wrapping up dinner, and I get a text from the guy. And my wife's like, who's that? And I said, you know, I looked at my phone. I was like, oh yeah, that's his name. I was like, oh, you know, he just got a deer. And she was like, you better throw your pack on, get up there. So, you know, it's been cool to help people and to get to know people and to show, there was a guy from Louisiana that came out here with his wife. And I was kind of showing them some areas that I'd seen some good mule deer, and they're like, wow, you're so nice. You know? And I'm like, you still got to put in the work. Right. And so I'm just trying to help out and kind of be a little bit more open, because it is, you know, it's public land. And on top of that, like, I understand if you're in, you've got a target buck and you've been tracking them since velvet or before. And, you know, that's a little different. I wouldn't give that away necessarily.
Yeah.
But I'd still be like, hey, I've seen mule deer over here. I've seen a good buck here, you know, and kind of help people out in that way. I feel like there needs to be a little bit less infighting with the hunting crowd. It's just something that seems to be tearing up the community a little bit. So I'm just trying to do my little part and help people out where I can, and not be so close-minded to other hunters, you know?
Oh yeah. I think as a community, anytime you can help somebody, like we've had guys in years past that have hit us up that, you know, camped down the valley from us. We didn't know them from Adam until, mm-hmm. you know, we bumped into each other, start talking, find out where they're from, find out their story. And we've had it where they message us, like, or what we used to do is go up to the top of the mountain, right? And mm-hmm. we'd get cell service and reach, like, call our wives, whatever, midweek, or like some people go up there and do it every night. And so we went up, and these guys, it's 11 o'clock at night, and they're like, hey, man, we got a big bull down. This is where we're at. We'd love any help, but we don't expect it. And so mm-hmm. we had like four guys that all bombed down in, helped them pack it out, and they were the nicest guys. We had the same thing happen last year. I went to a unit in Colorado that I had never hunted before. And we were just driving these roads, looking at different valleys, trying to figure out exactly where we wanted to hunt for the evening. It was like middle of the day. And I see this guy, and he's like walking from the road out. And I'm like, dude, he doesn't look like he's hunting. He just looks like he's hiking, you know? And so we stop and we talk to him, and he's like, dude, we shot a bull up on top of this, man. And it is like a long way. He's like, my buddy's still up there quartering it out. And he's like, we're not even going to make it back before dark. And I'm like, I mean, where you're talking about, yeah, you're right. But I was like, do you have Onyx? And he's like, no, I don't. And I was like, we were just about to drive like all the way up to the top. It's like 15 miles to get up there because of how you have to take the two tracks all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, based on where you think this bull is, I'm pretty sure you're going to be within like 200 yards of the side-by-side trail. And he's like, dude, if you guys are going up there, man, like anything that you can do to help. And so I was like, all right, man, well, we're going to cruise around. If we see something, we're obviously going to go after it. But if not, we're going to make our way around and see if we can help you out. Sure enough, we go all the way up. There was another group of guys. They had just loaded a bull onto the back of a side-by-side, the full bull in the back of it. I'm like, did you kill this thing right here? They're like, no, we all four drug this all the way up from the bottom. I'm like, oh, you're crazy. And so they put it in the back. We talked to them. We end up going all the way around, and I had dropped a pin somewhere in the area of where he said, and he's like, dude, we hung, or he's like, my buddy should be up there, but if not, we said we were going to hang like a vest or a hat or something high so that you can see it. So we get to the side-by-side, the end of the side-by-side trail, drop down off the ridge and look over, and it's like 75, 80 yards. And I see this orange vest, and I'm like, no way, man. Like, this is perfect. We see awesome. Him. He didn't ride up with us. He still hiked up it. So we had been there, and we're like, dude, we're just going to sit here in glass until we see him. And like 30 minutes later, he comes up the mountain, looks like he's about to die. And we end up just packing everything up on the side by side and driving it back for him. But yeah, that's when awesome. You can do that, especially these guys, like it was their first time out there, you know, any little bit of information or any help, you know, especially packing out an elk, it's going to bring them back, and it's just going to build the community. What I find, it seems like I find this in Colorado, though, is we talk to everybody, right? If we see somebody on the trail, we stop. We're like, hey, what tags do you have? You know, like, where are you hunting? Or, you know, have you been seen much? And yeah. like, we'll share what tags we have. And sometimes, you know, they're hunting mule deer, we're hunting elk, and we can help each other out. It seemed like every person from out of state was extremely helpful. I mean, they would just give you every piece of like, oh, dude, I just saw a big bull. Like, I've got a bull tag, but there's bulls right down here. I saw them down here 3 days ago. And then we run into people from Colorado, and they're like, oh, yeah, man, all the bulls are, you know, on the far southwest side of the unit. And I'm like, why are you hunting the northeast side of the unit then? Like, if you're hunting bulls,
yeah.
you know, and it's just kind of interesting, the mindset. And I think the Midwest is really good about that stuff, like helping each other out and like they'll just tell you everything. Like, dude, I had this buck and, you know, I'm going after these ones and they're on the neighbor's property, or they're hanging out in this public land area. And then you get out west and it's like, if they tell you where they hunt, like, they're going to end up burying you, you know, like, you're not making it out there with the information.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And I don't know why. I don't understand it. I don't know if it's just something that's taught. I'm not from Utah. So, you know, but I just kind of treat it the way I'd like to be treated. Like, obviously, I'm not asking you for your honey hole. You know, I don't necessarily want to go where you're going. I actually would like to stay away from you. So, yeah. You know, that's kind of how I treat it. But yeah, it's been a great season so far. You know, I'm excited for it. I'm excited to my buddy with his bison tag in January, and then we're black bear in Idaho for the spring.
Nice.
So we've got some stuff lined up, but I'm kind of excited, to be honest with you, to be done. I wish, you know, and I really hope tomorrow I fill the tag. If not, either way, I'm excited to go back to like dedicating all that time into family. Yep. And then tinkering, getting things set up, figuring out what I liked, what I didn't like about my setups. And then I've got a kind of a big project that I'm doing right now with Redbeard's Fit Crew, that I haven't announced there yet. I've kind of teased a little bit, but, I'm going to be doing something there, over the next year. Basically, it's going to be a kind of a year long thing, that I'm going to do with the crew. So I'll be announcing that probably tomorrow night during our weekly call.
Very cool.
But yeah, so I've got stuff in the works. I've got, you know, there's always stuff to do. I don't have as many cool hunts as you do, but I'll definitely get some opportunities here in the next couple of years to do some out-of-state stuff. And I need to get into whitetail as well.
Dude, whitetail's so much fun. Like, I know there's the diehard elk and mule deer hunters that they'll actually track the same elk or buck year after year. You know, I know it's a lot less common out west that people are able to do that just because of the ground that they cover and, you know, the hunting pressure and the predators. But that's one of the things that I love most about whitetail hunting, is to build a history with one specific deer or a bunch of different deer. Like, I've done that with does. I had a doe years ago that popped up on trail camera, and she has Roman nose. And so like, normally if you look sideways at a deer, it's like a 45 degree angle from the eyes down to the end of the nose. This was like the St. Louis Arch. Like, I mean, it like bowed out, and it was the weird, like, what's that animal, the puppet animal, elf, or is that right? What is that, elf? Maybe it's not. It looks weird. Like, it was an old puppet TV show, something. And it looks like that. I mean, it's just like this weird shape. And so the fact that even with a doe that I could actually continue to see this doe on camera and see it in person, and then see some of her offspring. Actually, my target buck right now for late season is a buck that I call Valentino, and he has Roman nose also. And I'm pretty sure that I got him on camera in the first moments of his life. She had given birth just off screen of my trail camera, and then I watched this tiny little fawn like emerge, and it's like stumbling all over the place. And dude, there's something addicting about it, because I love checking my trail cameras almost as much as I love hunting, and just like documenting, okay, these are the nights that they're there, these are the days that they're out during daylight. And with whitetail, the Drurys actually talk about this quite a bit. There's a lot of people who practice it now. They say annually, if you have, some guys won't even check their trail cameras at all the year of. They will check them after season, and then they will use the data that they gathered to hunt those same deer next year. And they're like, if you have a buck during daylight in a specific spot, you need to be there the day of, the day before, and the day after the following year. So say it's October 31st. You want to be there the 30th, 31st, and November 1st. And if that buck is still alive, there's a good chance, because of their annual pattern, that it will show up in the exact same spot or close to it within a day. And looking at trail camera photos now, I'm like, man, I heard that. And I was like, I've never done that. And I don't think I ever will, like, not check my cameras throughout the season. But I've seen annual patterns with whitetail where it's like, dude, I saw one, you know, November 10th, and here he is again. November 10th the next year, and he's in the same spot. And so it's just kind of a cool way that you can add to your hunt, or you can add to the intel that you get.
No, that's cool. Yeah, it's definitely something I need to get into, because I could go back to North Carolina and do it. I just need to find some property, which I'm sure is not too difficult, but you know, it's something that I haven't added to my plate as of yet. But yeah, I'd love to go out and do that sometime. That'd be a lot of fun.
I think you and I need to go up and hunt whitetail. Like what happened with your elk, with those three bulls, how you were on their tracks and you were following them. There's guys in northern Maine who will actually walk down whitetail. And if they find a fresh track, they will walk the fresh track and go slower and slower and slower. And they'll watch the spacing of the track to see how fast the deer is walking. They'll see if it's like stopping to graze, or if there's a bed somewhere, and then it gets up and goes again. And they do it right after a fresh snow. In fact, one of my buddies that I've had on the podcast before, they just had success this year doing that, where they just walked this public land, found buck tracks, and just continued to walk. And every time they'd come up like over a hill, they would just slowly peek over and scan and look and see if it was bedded down, or see if it was standing up, feeding, whatever. And they actually got a deer that way. And I'm like, that would be wild. Like,
that is interesting. Spot and stalk white deer.
Yeah, it's like spot and stalk. But he said normally, when you see it, it's time to shoot. So it's not like you saw the deer. You're just spot and stalk the tracks, or you're spot and stalking deer tracks until you catch up with it. And so I just thought that was really interesting. And with whitetail, you know, they'll run, but typically whitetail aren't running for a half mile. You know, they're going to run a couple hundred yards, stop, turn around, look around. And as long as you're not like right on top of them with a fresh snow, you might actually be able to catch up to them. So that's a hunt that I definitely want to do. It's moved way up on my bucket list to successfully harvest a whitetail by doing that.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a lot of fun. I'm going to have to check that out. I've never heard of that. So that's really cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, it'd be a fun hunt. What's bucket list for you? I mean, a bison hunt is pretty sweet. In fact, I just talked to a guy earlier today, and he drew an Arizona bison tag and got one, doing it solo. Luckily, he had guys that came in way late at night and helped him out. And I feel like a bison is just a different level. You know, you're talking like 1,100 plus pounds.
And, and my buddy's doing it with a bow.
Oh, my gosh. Dude, that is so sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're getting he's got his setup pretty dialed in, but it's going to be cold. I mean, it's going to be in the middle of January at like 10,000 feet of elevation. So it's going to be freezing. So that part I'm not necessarily excited about. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Jeez. And they actually said, the people that are the outfitters, they were like, yeah, we actually prefer them up here rather than down in the desert part of this area. Because the desert just sucks to stalk them in, because there's nothing to cover you. Yeah. But yeah, the bison are just, it's crazy. But I guess for, I don't know, bucket list, man, because I haven't knocked an elk down, elk is still there for me.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that'll change just because of the areas that they live in, the way they are, the sounds they make, the way they look, there's not really much else like that. Like, I like the idea of, you know, like a bighorn sheep or a really nice mule deer. Those are awesome. But I don't necessarily look forward to walking across shale cliff faces to bighorn sheep, stuff like that. So I really like the areas the elk are in. I know how frustrating they are, but I'm looking forward to having some good hunts that maybe they aren't as pressured and they're more in their natural environment that I can get in on them during September. I'm excited about that.
Yeah. So, I feel like the challenge of it makes it more rewarding once you actually connect. You know, I've been talking about this a lot lately, and I really do believe that the less success you have, the more failure you have, the more rewarding it is when you are successful, and the work that you have to put into it. Like, don't get me wrong. Say I go out to elk camp and we get base camp set up, and opening morning, I get out of the tent and there's a big elk right outside my tent. I'm pulling the trigger on it 100 out of 100 times. But when you actually have to go and find these elk and pattern them or figure out why they're working the area that they are, where they're going from bedding to water to food, and then you connect with it, and then the pack out, like the physical demand it takes on your body and the toll that it takes, all of that just makes it feel so much more rewarding. And as guys, like, we like to have a job, you know, like if I sat around all day, I wouldn't feel accomplished at the end of the day. Mm-mm. If I go and help my buddy build a deck, I'm going to be like, dude, I did something today, you know, and it's the same thing with hunting.
Yep. No, exactly. I feel that same way. It's definitely something that I feel like is ingrained in us. And I feel like that's why, you know, I've had a lot of people that are like, hey, when are you going to rifle hunt? And I'm like, well, there's a lot of reasons why I'm not going back to rifle hunting just yet. I want to have a significant amount of success with my bow, but also there's something different for me. Nothing against rifle hunting whatsoever, but there's something different for me with archery. I can't, like, there's the intangibles of it, but also, honestly, there's just something different about it for me. For some people, they enjoy rifle hunting, getting their setup dialed and everything with their rifle. You know, for me, I guess it would be time. If I had all the time in the world, baby. If I had all the money in the world, maybe, but I just really enjoy tinkering with bows, being able to shoot it in my garage, being able to take it out at distance, you know, just so many things that click with me with archery versus rifle hunting. So, that's kind of where I'm at right now. That's where I'm going to stay for a while. So
what setup does your buddy have for a bison? Cause I can only, I mean, I know that traditionally, like, bison were killed with bow and arrow. But I feel like with all of the technology that we have now, I mean, you can really manufacture an arrow setup and your bow setup specifically for an animal of that size.
Yeah. So he's got a 30-inch draw. So his arrow is a little bit heavier. He's shooting the Hoyt carbon bow, the RX-7. So it'll be a little bit better for that cold temperature.
Yep.
He's got it. I want to say it's the 80-pound bow.
Okay.
Or high 70s, 80 pounds, somewhere around there. And he's going to be shooting the Vector broadheads that Vector just came out with, and the Vector arrows. And then, so he has obviously hasn't tagged out yet, but someone who has put an arrow through a bison would be Preston. A lot of people might know him as Mountain Physio on Instagram. He arrowed a bull. Was it 2 years ago or a year ago? I'd recommend people go watch that video, but he put an iron will with kind of a heavier arrow through a bison, and it had a complete pass through. So, you know, it's good shot placement, obviously, but also you want to have a sharp broadhead with oomph behind it. So good poundage and maybe a little bit heavier arrow than maybe you'd shoot for a mule deer or an elk. I don't know. I'd say probably about the same setup as an elk, but you know, mule deer, you can go a little bit lighter so you can get a further shot, I guess, is what some people aim for. But yeah, so that's kind of what he's doing, is just a higher poundage, which he's going to shoot anyway, a little bit heavier arrow, and he's going to have the Vector broadheads.
Nice. I can only imagine, man, coming away with 300 or 400 pounds of bison meat. Dude, I love eating buffalo. And I mean, it's all farm raised, right? I've never eaten a wild buffalo, but I can only imagine how good that would taste. I'd be meticulously dissecting every cut of meat on that and getting everything I could out of it.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting to watch for sure. He had a good buck as well this season, so he's had a good year as well. Not nearly as many animals down as you, but yeah, he's had a good season. So I'm excited to see what he does for the bison hunt. I'm excited to help him out with that.
That's sweet, man. Well, dude, it sounds like, I mean, you've got your hands full tomorrow, but like the culmination of an entire season now in one day, and I'm sure it's going to be exciting and high alert.
No pressure.
And, dude, hopefully I get a text saying, dude, it happened. I connected. Yeah. But I appreciate you hopping on, man, and it's always good talking to you. And like I said, hopefully we can connect. Are you going to be at the Western Hunt Expo by chance?
I'm thinking about it. I've got a lot of things that I'm got coming up this year, so I don't know how much time I can pull from the family bucket as far as time is concerned, but we'll see. I know I'm going to be at a couple elk shaped camps. And then possibly the Western Hunting Summit. That's something that is in the works, but yeah, I'd love to get out there and see what they've got to offer as well.
Yeah. Let me know if you do. I'll be out there for that expo and hopefully I can pair that.
Sorry. I take that back. I misunderstood you. So the Western Hunt, is it Summit that I'm thinking about then that does that Stealthy Hunter puts on?
Maybe. Yeah, no,
that's what I was thinking. Oh yeah, no, the Western Hunt Expo. Yeah, 100% I'll be there.
Yeah.
I'm gonna help I'm gonna be helping Wild Arrow run their booth.
Okay.
And sweet. Then I'll be out there with the First Form Outdoors guys as well. So
sweet, man. Well, we'll see you there. I'll be out there and I went to that show. That's the first show that I've ever gone to and absolutely loved it. It's something that I'll probably go to every year, and I've got a couple other guys that I know out there, and it's just always fun to go and see all the new stuff coming out. You know, like as far as Western big game goes, that's the event to be at. And so when people are releasing new stuff and hearing about some of the rifle setups and the technology that pairs optics with range with your cell phone and rangefinders, and I'm just like, dude, I stopped by the Vortex booth, and that's when I found out about their ballistic compensating binoculars. And I know you're an archery hunter, but as far as a rifle hunter goes, like I geek out about that stuff, because now you can load all your ballistic data into your binoculars so that when you range an animal, it tells you your bullet drop and what to adjust to that fast. And I'm like, next thing they're going to have drones out here shooting elk for us, you know, like it's just insane how fast technology is moving. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to that expo for sure. So we'll definitely connect there. And then we got to get a hunt on the books, man. We got to plan something out. You come out here and do some whitetail hunting or turkey hunting or coyote or whatever. As far as like big game goes, I have nothing to offer you here, but
hopefully, no, man, hopefully I'm good with turkeys. I'm great with turkeys, man.
Oh yeah. They've been opening up elk season and bear season here. But I want to say they've only given out like 6 tags a year. And so, and they all go to residents, but you know, as these conservation organizations keep doing more work, eventually we're going to be like, anybody's going to be able to put in for these tags, and hopefully that happens sooner than later.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, whitetail or turkey, I'm definitely up for that. And any coyote that walks out in the way, you know, take care of him too.
Oh, so. Dude, those are always fun. Well, before we hop off, if people haven't listened to the Western Rookie episode that you were on, why don't you share with them where they can find you, where they can follow along, connect with Redbeard Outdoors or Fit Crew?
Yeah, no, for sure. And we definitely delved into fitness a lot more on the Western Rookie. Podcast. So that was this. It was a totally different conversation. So you guys aren't getting a replay of what we had previously. So definitely go check that one out as well. But if you want to link up with me, just on Instagram, I'm at red.beard.outdoors, and then the on Facebook, just Redbeard's Fit Crew. I'd love to have you over there. Again, like I said, we're doing a big project, so I'd love to have you in on that. Kicking off the new year, you know, everyone does New Year, New Me. We're gonna do it a different way. We do weekly calls there, and also of course I'm with First Form Outdoors, so if you want to go join that group as well, just great like-minded individuals that want to succeed in life and get outdoors. So you don't have to be a hunter, you don't have to be a fisher, or fisherman. If you just like to go out and canoe, camp, backpack, hike, whatever, we want you in the groups as well. So come join us, and that's where you can link up with me.
Heck yeah, man. And if you guys are listening to this and you want to watch the video of it, go check out YouTube, and then you need to comment on what his flag says there on his wall, because
you found a way to sneak it in.
I know. I honestly didn't even think about it, and then you started saying First Form, and I was like, oh gosh, man, we probably would have gone on a 20-minute tangent about it. So it's probably good that we leave it for the end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, go check the YouTube video out as well. So that'll be a good one.
Well, sweet, man. I appreciate it, and we'll see you soon.
Yeah, same to you, man. Thanks for having me on.
And that is going to wrap it up for today's show. What an awesome episode, and it's always fun to talk to Jonathan. He is a guy that's going to be on the podcast a ton, and I'm really excited to meet up with him in Salt Lake City. So I haven't heard from him yet today, I actually recorded this outro the day after we had our conversation, so I'm not totally sure how it went. It could be a good thing that I haven't heard from him. Maybe he's still out there packing out a bull, or maybe it's a bad thing and he just had no updates for me at all. Either way, the end of a season is a bittersweet time. You know, you're looking forward to next season, you're looking forward to time with your family, but also when you end any season, it's just like, man, it's a long wait until the next one starts. But I'm pumped to meet up with him in Salt Lake City, and if you guys are going to be out there at all, please come by. If you see me walking around, say hi. We'll grab a picture together, maybe make some stupid TikTok dance or something, and I'm going to be out there just making connections and chatting with other hunters and outdoorsmen and women. So come say hi, and until next time, always choose adventure, and God bless.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.